Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute and Global Chair of CEO and Executive Positioning for Edelman. I'm joined today by Hubert Joly, the former CEO and Chair of Best Buy, a senior lecturer at Harvard Business School, and author of the best-selling book, The Heart of Business. Hubert contributed to the Edelman Trust Institute's publication, A Compendium of Essays from Leading Experts Offering Insights on How to Increase Trust in an Increasingly Polarized World. In your essay, Hubert, titled Why It's Time for Business to Lead with Purpose, you argue that when a company pursues a higher purpose, it can address some of the world's most serious challenges and expand business growth opportunities. Hubert, welcome to the Trustmakers.
Well, thank you, Justin, for having me. I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to chat with you. Why don't we start off? Your essay is titled, Why It's Time for Business to Lead with Purpose. One could argue it's been that time for quite a while. So why is specifically now the time?
It's been that time since Aristotle, you could say, or Adam Smith, but it's particularly time. And the reason, you know, even though I'm an eternal optimist, Justin, in the last 2 years, I've had to say out loud, the world we live in is not working, right? We've had a health crisis, we have an economic crisis, societal issues, racial issues, an environmental time bomb, geopolitical tensions, to say the least. And what's the definition of madness, right? Do the same thing and hope for a different outcome. And for me, you know, on my FBI most wanted list, there's two people. One is Milton Friedman, you know, shareholder primacy. And the other one is Bob McNamara, you know, the inventor of top-down scientific management. And these things are not working. And so today, you know, we go back to this idea of why do we work, right? Why are we in business? It's to do something good in the world. I think it's the conviction that business can be a force for good. And of course, with Edelman, we have the data, right? That people in society are expecting business leaders to do this. So my view is that this can be the finest hours for leaders, a little bit like in May 1940, when everything seemed very dark. This is the moment where we step back and we rise to the occasion and say, how can I contribute to making this world a better place? I have three amazing granddaughters, ages 2 to 4. In 10 years from now, Justin, they're going to turn to me and say, Happy, they call me Happy, you knew. What did you do?
So you mentioned the rising expectation of businesses and its leaders to tackle these major societal issues. But why is it business's responsibility?
Well, business, you know, it's where all of us as human beings actually work. And business have become the strongest types of institutions and have the biggest footprint. We touch so many different things. And again, if we go back, so you have to almost go back at the very personal level. Why do I live? Why do I work? Is work a punishment because some dude sinned in paradise, right? Is it something you do so that you can do something else that's more fun? Or is work part of our fulfillment? And I believe that in the heart of every human being, there's a desire to do something good in the world. And in the same way, what is a business? What is a company, Justin? At the most fundamental level, it's a human organization made of individuals working together in pursuit of a goal. And for me, profit is, of course, is an imperative, it's an outcome, but it's not the ultimate purpose in the same way that getting rich can never be the ultimate purpose of my life. And so as human beings working together, we see unmet needs, we see problems in the world, and our mission, that's what startups think about, right? How can I contribute to solving an unsolved problem? That's why we exist.
And when you think of the ultimate purpose of a business, can you give your life experience in terms of being CEO of Best Buy and the turnaround there?
Yeah, so at Best Buy, so I became CEO of Best Buy in 2012. The company was supposed to die at the time. And we turned it around essentially by fixing what was broken at first. It was that first phase, which was the turnaround. Even in these dark days, by the way, we thought about all of our stakeholders, our employees, our customers, our vendors, community, and the environment with our recycling program. So it was not just a financial turnaround, it was holistic. And then the second phase, once we had saved the company, we started to ask ourselves, what do we want to look like when we grow up? What kind of company do we want to be? And that led us to not only work on our strategy, but on our purpose. And a turning point, Justin, was to say, we're actually not a retailer. We're a company that's defined by its purpose, which is to enrich lives through technology by addressing key human needs. And that was transformative, A, because it was inspiring for all of us, and B, it unlocked a number of otherwise, you know, new markets, like our going into the health space, helping aging seniors stay and live in their home longer independently with the help of technology and sensors that allow us to, you know, remotely monitor if there's something wrong going on. So by defining, you know, its business around a purpose, you actually expand the addressable market and the growth opportunities. That was what we saw. And part of the success of Best Buy was derived from that.
So by expanding the purpose of a company, you're actually changing what a company is able to do and what is licensed to do?
Yeah, and it's from a strategic standpoint, it makes a lot of sense, right? So if you define your business based on the way you've historically delivered the products and services, you get stuck, you don't evolve. Whereas if you define it around the needs you're trying to address in the world, it allows you to evolve and stay relevant. The reason why, you know, companies die is because at some point they become irrelevant. So it's a very healthy and productive and strategic way to define the business around its purpose. And I define, how do I define, what is a purpose? You know, because every company now is talking about their purpose. In the heart of business, I suggest that a company will define its purpose around, you know, really the intersection between four circles. The needs you're trying to address in the world, the unique capabilities you have, what you're passionate about, and how you can make money. So it's not some poetic exercise, it's actually a real business exercise. And what I've found, Justice, from experience working with a number of companies over the years now, including in my new role as a professor, is that it's very interesting. The higher you make that purpose, the more the energy level in the organization goes up and the greater the results can be. So at a time where everybody is fatigued, the intuition could be, well, let's try to do less. No, this is the time to do more. And the galvanization, talking about the finest hour, the galvanization that we saw in England in June of 1940, when Churchill appealed to the British people to rise to the occasion, was extraordinary. And so it's the size of the question you ask, it's the level of ambition. And I think there's merit in being ambitious around your purpose as a company.
One of the things that I've loved hearing you write about and talk about in the past is the implementation of that purpose at Best Buy, because to me, it's one thing to have words and values and a purpose that inspires, but how do you actually operationalize that? So can you talk about that?
So for me, there's two things once you've defined a purpose. One is make it the cornerstone of the strategy. It's really time to look at the activities of the company and decide what you're going to stop doing, start doing, and continue or evolve doing to align all of your activities in pursuit of that purpose. If you don't do this, you've done nothing. The second thing, which is in a sense harder and probably even more powerful, is to create an environment where everyone at the company can write themselves into that story and connect what drives them with their work and the purpose of the company.
In your essay and in your book, you give several other examples of businesses that have successfully used purpose to activate positive change, sometimes for society, often both for society and for profit. Can you give another example or two?
Yeah, because these examples are very inspiring. So Yeah, I mean, one of them is MasterCard, great company, you know, led by a good friend, Ajay Banga. You know, when he started, market cap was probably $35 billion. Now it's 10x. Of course, MasterCard, that's a credit card company. Well, no, that's a company that's there to facilitate payments. And Ajay redefined the company around that, that included, therefore, all of the cash transactions in the world. And that's a market that's, you know, probably at least 10x, you know, the credit card market. And that led him to expand the business in developing countries where all of the transactions are cash and where poor people are getting completely clobbered because, as our good friend Dan Shulman at PayPal said, it's expensive to be poor. So if you want to send cash or money to your relatives in a faraway village, you know, you're going to either have to walk to that village or you're going to have to pay people to do this. It's very expensive to be poor. If you can create means of payments that facilitate that, that is a big unlock. And so that is something that is vastly, where it's vastly expanded this market. And similarly, and by the way, in partnership, sometimes you have to do this in partnership, in this case with governments in these countries. I was talking about Dan Shulman at PayPal. It was the same idea, this inclusive strategy of financial inclusion, which at PayPal started actually with the employees of the company, because Dan realized that so many of his employees, to his surprise, you know, are living paycheck to paycheck and developing their financial literacy enabled them to be more productive. And then for him to develop a set of services, you know, for the have-nots. And so unlocking unmet demands in the market and triggering growth. So killing several birds, nothing against bird, but with one stone, right? Solving problems in the world, triggering growth, you know, addressing the needs of your employees. The last example I would mention, in part because I'm on their board and I love that company, that's Ralph Lauren. So Ralph Lauren, you could think about them as a an apparel company. And under the leadership of Ralph and, of course, his CEO, Patrice Louvet, they're pursuing a different idea. They're not an apparel company. They're a company that's there to inspire the dream of a better life through authenticity and timeless style, which is a much bigger idea that differentiates them from anybody. And by the way, what's beautiful in their case is how they make this come to life very concretely by embracing all stakeholders. They have strategies around minimizing their environmental footprint, you know, like the Earth Polo shirt, which is made of recycled plastic bottles. So it's really putting this sense of responsibility at the core of the strategy that I find inspiring in these examples.
What I like also about those examples you used is you also start to pivot more into how purpose gets reflected in an external branding as well, or in this case, even advertising, so that this is not just about employees. And, you know, you mentioned Dan Shulman. There's a line that I've heard him use before where you got to take your values and take them off the wall. And for sure, that means with your employees, but I also like that where you're going is with your advertising, with your stakeholder relations, with all of your trusted relationships.
And also, it's this idea, to build on what you just said, Justin, of a declaration of interdependence. Business cannot be successful in isolation. You know, Best Buy is based in Minneapolis. Following the murder of George Floyd, you know, when the city's on fire, you cannot open the stores. You don't have a business. Similarly, if the planet is on fire, you know, that's the biggest business risk, according to Larry Fink. So our responsibility as leaders is to develop this system thinking and develop win-win-win outcomes. It's not the time for zero-sum games, right? That's another pandemic. So as an illustration of this, it's a small example, but I think it illustrates the point. At Best Buy, we have this recycling program where, irrespective of where you bought it, if you have old electronics that you want to get rid of, you can bring it to the store. We'll recycle it for you. So it's good for you because you know, you empty your closets. It builds traffic to the stores, and then it allows you to recycle, you know, some metals and rare minerals and so forth. So it's good for the planet. So that's a win-win-win outcome. And I think that that's what leaders need to think about, is find these win-win-win outcomes.
Yeah, that's a great one, as I assume you're also driving a lot of traffic back into the stores by doing that. So it does seem like a win all around.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of thinking of that win-win construct, but also the growing responsibilities for business, just in the time since you were Best Buy CEO, I know so much of the work you do now is counseling CEOs. How has that role changed just in the few years between you sitting in the seat yourself and advising people who are sitting in that seat?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating to see how the role of the CEOs have changed. And whether it's in the last 2 years or 10 years, you can debate, but it's massive. Number one, the mission has changed. It used to be all about profit maximization. Now it's about serving all of the stakeholders. So therefore, the scope of the responsibility has changed. It's no longer just the four walls of the business. It's this system thinking that they need to develop. And then the approach has changed. You know, last century, CEOs were these superheroes who knew everything, you know, and would tell other people what to do. Nobody wants to follow a leader like this. So, because to illustrate this, I was with a CEO of a global Fortune 50 company the other day. And he was saying, Justin, look, my raw materials are coming from China and Russia. My supply chain is a mess. There's inflation through the gazoo. My employees are fatigued. There is a recession coming. I don't know how to deal with this. And he shared that with his team, of course. And his team said, how could you? Of course you cannot. You don't know. You know, who could? But we're going to figure it out together. So this is the evolution, and Satya Nadella talks about it. It's moving from the know-it-alls to the learn-it-alls and being able to say, I don't know. Let's go back to probably, that was the conclusion of the conversation. You go back to purpose and principles or values, and then you do your best. This is a world where, that's another interesting insight for me. I remember growing up as an executive, my boss told me, I appreciate effort, but the only thing I care about is results. In a world that's completely unpredictable, that's wrong. The only thing you control is your efforts and doing your best. And the results are going to depend on so many different things that are completely outside of your control. And it's actually better practice. I know that if you're in sports, if you're too focused on the goal of the outcome, you're going to, you know, be stiff. So relaxing and just say, let me be the best version of myself I can be. It's very counterintuitive, but very profound.
Do you feel like there were some shifts during work from home and COVID that have actually accelerated this ability to be more horizontal, a little less results focused? Like, are there some dynamics that have changed that have actually opened that path up more for CEOs and other leaders?
I think the last 2 or 3 years, it's been COVID, but it's also been the accumulation of unprecedented crisis. Humidity has become the dominant characteristic. And in the face of so much uncertainty and unprecedented crisis, you know, during COVID, when you couldn't go outside, you had to go inside and be very self-reflective and say, how do I want to navigate through this? How do I want to be remembered? What's going to be essential? What are the things that are intangible and we will not deviate from? I think was more important than ever. And I think everybody has become more self-reflective, more aware of what's important, more aware of we're dealing with other human beings. You know, my employees, you know, those on the front line in the stores, I knew they were exposed to danger. So I, you know, my empathy for them, of course, went up. The employees who are working from home, all of a sudden, I see their cats, their dogs, their children. You know, it's obvious they're human beings, not just a wonderful, you know, executive. They're full-fledged, messy, quirky, complicated, beautiful human beings. That's a big change.
Yeah, and I wonder, in this moment when you're recommending that CEOs, leaders be more humble, put more forth their authentic selves, how do you at the same time be inspiring and also optimistic about the future? You've mentioned a few times all the multi-crises that we're facing. How can you be humble and optimistic and show a path to the future at the same time?
Yeah, that's a big part of our role as leaders is to be optimistic. I love this Latin phrase that's inscribed on the shoulder of the statue of Kurt Carlson, the founder of Carlson Companies, where I was CEO before Best Buy. It's illegitimi non carborandum, which is don't let the bastards grind you down. So there is a messy environment around us. There's things we don't like. There's people in power we don't like, we may or may not like. We shouldn't give them that power to drag us down. As a leader, that's one of the things I learned, you know, when I was leading Best Buy. We cannot be a thermometer. We have to be a thermostat. And I think in physics, we learn that energy cannot be created, right? Unfortunately, these days. But in a human organization, you can actually create energy. And you know, our job is not to say, oh, it's cold or it's warm. It's to create that energy, that momentum. And with our team, co-create, define a future that does not exist yet, that needs to be better than what we have, and co-create the plan and the environment to get there from here. That's what's expected of us. It's a decision we get to make every day. It's how do we show up?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is in your answer, you still suggest that leaders remain humble and keep their ears open. And part of being inspiring and optimistic is actually listening and creating a shared future, which is, I think, a really great approach. In the conversations that I'm having with CEOs, one of the foremost topics on their mind is how to navigate this call to speak out or not around societal issues. And I'm curious, in your conversations and what you're observing, how do you see smart CEOs navigating that enhanced expectation to speak out on societal issues?
So you're right, Justin. I mean, that's the newest and toughest issue. And we spend quite a bit of time at Harvard with, you know, CEOs and senior executives around that. Because we have to remember that as CEOs, we're not elected officials. We're not competent on every issue. And we cannot chase every car, right? Otherwise, it becomes a different job. At the same time, the idea that you would say, no, I'm not going to get involved in anything doesn't make any sense. So what we're seeing is that companies, management teams, often with their board, define criteria on how to decide when to get involved, on what topics. They define a process to make that decision. They build resources to be able to be equipped to make that decision and deal with them. The criteria tend to evolve around, you know, to what extent is this topic related to my purpose or my values or my key stakeholders? You also have to be careful around being legitimate and have done the work, right? So speaking sometimes can be easy. Doing something, I think, is increasingly what's expected of companies.
Yeah, I love you focusing on the importance of action. I would say, over the last 2 years or so, I've probably advised more CEOs and leaders not to speak than probably the two decades before that. Because now, if you don't have some action behind it or a reason to speak, it's seen as performative and is often not contributing.
So the debate is moving towards, you know, because based on all of your data, people are turning to companies to do something about these societal matters. To paraphrase the title of a book of my friend Jeb Citrin, you're in charge, now what? What have you done for me lately? And again, words are cheap, so actions are more important.
Great. Well, to finish up, I'm curious to take a whole different perspective, and that's the perspective of your students. So you're a lecturer now at Harvard Business School. On these topics of purpose, on the evolution of business, what are you hearing from your students? What are you learning from them?
Yeah, it's fabulous. And it's both the MBA students as well as executives in our executive education programs. What I see and what I hear, it gives me a lot of hope, Justin. This is a generation, and it's also the generation of my children, of children between the ages of 27 and 35. These are individuals, it's hard to generalize, but a large portion of them care about the future, care about this planet. They're worried, and they want to make sure that they do their best to make a positive difference in the world. So, and similarly, senior executives in our executive education program, these are people, great values. They know that the excesses of greed and ego, that's not what's going to, help anything. So I think this next generation of leaders have wonderful qualities and gives me great joy to work alongside them and humbly try to add whatever value I can add to their journey.
That is an optimistic way to end our conversation. Hubert, I really thank you for your time, sharing your insights and expertise. Folks, please, if you haven't read his book, The Heart of Business, also there will be a link to Hubert's essay that he did with the Trust Institute on today's show notes. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.